continue this week in our study on providence. We looked last week in Ecclesiastes chapter 3 at the idea that God has a time and a purpose for everything that He has created, a season for everything. When you look at Isaiah chapter 46, verses 9 through 11, I think we've looked at this a little bit. It's the fact that God's will is going to come to pass no matter what. God's will shall be carried out. When you look at in Isaiah chapter 46 and verse 9, it says, "Remember the former things of old, for I am God and there is none other. I am God and there is none like me, declaring the end from the beginning and from ancient times things that are not yet done. Saying, my counsel shall stand, I will do all my pleasure. Calling a bird of prey from the east, the man who executes my counsel from a far country. Indeed, I have spoken it, I will bring it to pass, I have purposed it. I will also do it." So we understand that God directs all things as He pleases, and it's according to His knowledge and according to those things that He wills to happen. And although mankind may not understand, we may not know what life has in store, we may not know why certain things happen or why things don't happen, why we don't want them, or why they don't happen the way we think they should, God knows. God does know. And He has a plan and a purpose for all. Verse 11 there refers to the God's people in captivity in Babylon and God's choosing to raise up Cyrus for the intended purpose to allow the Jews to return back to the homeland. God had a purpose for that, which we looked at a few weeks earlier. And just like God knew Israel's end from the beginning, He knows our end. And we're promised that if we trust and obey God, that He's going to work all things for good. And ultimately, He's going to work those things if we'll simply trust and obey Him. He's going to work those things for our benefit, that we can achieve that desired goal of a home in heaven, which He has purposed through Christ. We left off last week. If you want to go ahead and turn to the book of Esther. Go back through this, and again, we'll kind of hit the high points in this, but we notice how the details in this book involve God's providence. We see how things work together in order to accomplish God's will and how He has purposed these things. I mentioned last week that when we look back at the book of Esther, we see God's providence in the preservation of His people, and yet we noted last week that not one time is God's name mentioned in this book, and yet we see God at work. In Esther, again, we find the Jews living in Persia under the king Ahasuerus. Some of the Jews had already returned back to the homeland. There's still a portion that remains there. But here in Esther, we again find a portion of these Jews living in captivity. So again, we'll kind of hit the high points in this story and see how these things work together. Mentioned last week that in chapter 1, we'll kind of review, go back from the beginning, and we'll kind of get the whole picture. But in chapter 1, we find King Ahasuerus and his wife, Queen Vashti. We understand that the king there in chapter 1 throws this great banquet. And he desires the queen there to come and to show off her beauty for all the people gathered there. Verse 2 tells us that the queen refuses to come. And because she refuses to come, the king is outraged, he's angry. And ultimately, she is stripped of her crown, and therefore they need a new queen to be there for the king. And he begins this search for a woman who would replace Vashti as queen. We notice again, chapter 2, verses 1 through 7. That after these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus subsided, he remembered Vashti, what she had done, and what had been decreed against her. Then the king's servants who attended him said, "Let beautiful young virgins be sought for the king, and let the king appoint officers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather all the beautiful young virgins to Shushan the citadel, into the women's quarters under the custody of Haggai the king's eunuch, custodian of the women. And let beauty preparations be given them, then let the young women who pleases the king be queen instead of Vashti." This thing pleased the king, and he did so. And so the story there in chapter 2 is this process. We see that Esther finds favor with the king's servant, which she had appointed to be over these young women. And we see in the course of time there that she gains favor also with the king. And ultimately she does become queen. When you look at verse 17, it says the king loved Esther more than all the other women. And she obtained grace and favor in his sight more than all the virgins. So he set the royal crown upon her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. So we see this woman is a Jewish woman. She is a cousin of Mordecai. So we can already see God's plan here at work, that even though his people were in this foreign land in exile, and although he searched over 127 provinces to find a new queen, you think of the countless numbers of women that came in this search, how this one woman was chosen. And it didn't happen by a mere accident. And we're going to see in these series of events that if you leave one part out, that the rest of it doesn't take place. It doesn't work out the way that it should or the way God intended. But we know that God had a purpose for all these things. So now that Esther is on the throne as queen in the land, we find in the meantime Esther's cousin Mordecai. And in chapter 2, we see that he's there sitting at the king's gate when he overhears this plot by these two men that seek to kill the king. Look at chapter 2 and verse 21. It says, in those days, while Mordecai sat within the king's gate, two of the king's eunuchs, Bigthan and Teresh, doorkeepers, became furious and sought to lay hands on King Ahasuerus. In verses 22 and 23, we're told that Mordecai tells Esther of this plot that he overhears while he's sitting there. And Esther, of course, goes to the king in Mordecai's name, and she reveals there what these two men were planning to do. Verse 23, if you'll notice, says, and when the inquiry was made into the matter, it was confirmed, and both were hanged on a gallows. Notice, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles in the presence of the king. These things were written down. They were recorded in this book of Chronicles, this book of records that the king kept. It's going to be important here in just a minute as we go on through this story that we go back to this and see that these things were recorded and how that's going to play out just a little bit later on in this. It's going to be a key part of this account. But again, as we go through these things, see how these events work together, how one thing leads to another. And ask as we go through these, did these things happen by chance? What if Esther hadn't become queen? What if Mordecai just didn't happen to be sitting at that gate at that specific time when he heard this conversation, this plot to kill the king? What if that hadn't happened? Chapter 3, we find that the king had a servant. He had a servant named Haman who was promoted over all the princes in the kingdom. Notice chapter 3 and verse 2. It says, and all the king's servants who were within the king's gate bowed and paid homage to Haman, for so the king had commanded concerning him. But Mordecai would not bow nor pay homage. So Mordecai, who was a Jew, refused to bow down to Haman. He failed there to bow down and give him the respect that Haman thought was due him. And of course, we know the result of that, the anger that it caused in Haman, that it stirred up in him, even to the point that it resulted in Haman's plan to kill not only Mordecai, but to totally annihilate those Jews that lived in this country. Look at verses 5 and 6. It says, when Haman saw that Mordecai did not bow or pay him homage, Haman was filled with wrath. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had told him of the people of Mordecai. Instead, Haman sought to destroy all the Jews who were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, the people of Mordecai. So we read of Haman's plan there in verses 8 through 13, this plan that he came up with in order to annihilate the Jews from this land. Look at verse 8. It said, then Haman said to the king Ahasuerus, there's a certain people scattered and dispersed among the people in all the provinces of your kingdom. Their laws are different from all other peoples, and they do not keep the king's laws. Therefore, it is not fitting for the king to let them remain. If it pleases the king, let a decree be written that they be destroyed, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver into the hands of those who do the work to bring it into the king's treasuries. Drop down to verse 12. It says, and the king's scribes were called on the 13th day of the first month, and a decree was written according to all that Haman commanded, to the king's satraps, to the governors who were over each province, to the officials of all people, to every province according to the script, and to every people in their language. In the name of King Ahasuerus, it is written and sealed with the king's signet ring. And the letters were sent by couriers into all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, on the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month of Adar, and to plunder their possessions. So we see this plan to destroy the Jews on this specific day that had been set. When Mordecai hears about this plan, he urges Esther to go to the king to make intercession for the Jews so that her people may be saved. But we read that Esther is afraid of doing this. She had not even been called into the king for 30 days, and it was against the law for the queen to go into the king unless he had called for her first. But we notice Mordecai's words, as most of you probably know, in chapter 4 and verse 14. It says, "For if you remain completely silent at this time, relief and deliverance will arise for the Jews from another place. But you and your father's house will perish. Yet who knows whether you have come to the kingdom for such a time as this?" In other words, do you think perhaps through God's knowledge, through His providence, through those things that He knows, He has allowed you to come into this position of royalty in this foreign land? You being a Jew in this foreign land, do you think God perhaps has placed you here in order to serve a purpose in the saving of your people? Go ahead, Mark.
The way he prefaced that comment by saying, if you do remain completely silent or you don't take action in this, help is coming. God's going to work
through
these problems. It's just going to be through something else. How do you know that he didn't put you here?
Exactly right. He had a confidence in God that he knew that one way or another, God's plan, his purpose, would be fulfilled, whether it was through Esther. If she refused, then God would have chosen somebody else. Exactly right. Good point. So we understand that Mordecai and Esther didn't know how things were going to play out here, but God did. He understood these series of events. He understood how people would respond. He understood the people involved. He understood the positions they held, the timing of all these things. We understand that these things didn't happen by mere chance. That God knew these things. Everything, everyone involved had a time, and it had a purpose in the delivering of God's people from this land. In chapter 4, verses 15 through 17, we read that Esther makes plans to go try to get the attention of the king and to intercede for her people. Look at verses 15 through 17 in chapter 4. It says, "And Esther told them to reply to Mordecai, 'Go gather all the Jews who are present in Shushan and fast for me, neither eat nor drink for 3 days, night or day. My maids and I will fast likewise, and so I will go to the king, which is against the law, and if I perish, I perish.' So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther commanded him." In chapter 5 there, Esther begins to her plan here. She dresses in her royal robe. She stands there in the king's inner court, hoping to draw his attention that he may call summons for her. And we notice in verse 3 that he does indeed notice her, that he takes notice there of her beauty. And when you look in verse 3, he asks her what request that she may have. It says, "And the king said to her, 'What do you wish, Queen Esther? What is your request? It shall be given to you up to half the kingdom.'" We read in verse 4 that Esther requests a banquet in order to honor Haman. You look in verses 5 through 8, the Queen Esther says, "The king said, 'Bring Haman quickly that he may do as Esther has said.' So the king and Haman went to the banquet that Esther had prepared. And the banquet of wine, the king said to Esther, 'What is your petition? It shall be granted to you. What is your request? Up to half the kingdom, it shall be done.' And Esther answered and said, 'My petition and request is this. If I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it pleases the king to grant my petition and fulfill my request, then let the king and Haman come to the banquet which I will prepare for them, and tomorrow I will do as the king has said.'" So the queen Esther would prepare this banquet on the following day, and Haman and the king would come back, and there she would make known the request that she had for the king. After leaving the banquet, and you could imagine that Haman is pretty pumped up. He's filled with joy. I'm sure he was a pretty proud man. But after this first banquet, we find Haman on his way home, and when he passed by Mordecai sitting there once again, we find Mordecai did not stand. He did not tremble. He did not pay homage to Mordecai or to Haman as he had in times past. And we understand that Haman was filled with great anger. Once again, he was reminded of that disdain that he had for Mordecai and the Jews. On his way, when he finally gets home, he tells his family of his anger and his dissatisfaction with Mordecai, and his family there comes up with this plan in order to once and for all get rid of Mordecai, to get rid of this thorn in the side of Haman. Read verse 14. It says, "Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, 'Let a gallows be made 50 cubits high, and in the morning suggest to the king that Mordecai be hanged on it. Then go merrily with the king to the banquet.' And the thing pleased Haman, so he had the gallows made." So these gallows were to be constructed. He would go to the king the next day and propose this plan that Mordecai be hanged from these gallows. Look in chapter 6, verses 1 and 2. We again see God's plan, God's providence at work. We see some events unfold that didn't, again, happen by mere chance or mere accident. And again, if you left chapter 6, verses 1 and 2 out, it would be an entirely different story. Somebody read for us there chapter 6, verses 1 and 2, please.
"On that night the king did not sleep, and he gave orders to bring the book of memorial deeds to the Chronicles, and they were read before the king. And it was found written how Mordecai had told about Bigthans and Tiresh, two of the king's eunuchs who guarded the threshold and who had sought to lay hands on the king."
We mentioned just a moment ago that back in chapter 2, verses 21 through 23, how that was so important that was recorded, what happened there. And we can remember those events that happened, how Mordecai had foiled the plan of these two men to kill the king. Here we see the king reminded of those deeds as he had these records read for him that night just because he couldn't sleep. Mordecai's good deed was recorded there in this very same book that the king is having read for him here in chapter 6. So the king, having been reminded of Mordecai's good deeds, seeks to honor Mordecai, to repay him for that great thing which he has done in saving the king's life. And we notice how this plays out. It's a little bit of a lengthy reading, but we notice how these things play out in verses 3 through 10. It says, "And the king said, 'What honor or dignity has been bestowed on Mordecai for this?' And the king's servants who attended him said, 'Nothing has been done for him.' So the king said, 'Who is in the court?' Now Haman had just entered the outer court of the king's palace to suggest that the king hang Mordecai on the gallows that he had prepared for him." So the king here is seeking to honor Mordecai, and at the same time Haman is coming up here to tell the king of this plan that he has to kill Mordecai. And the king's servant said to him, 'Haman is there standing in the court.' And the king said, 'Let him come in.' So Haman came in, and the king asked him, 'What shall be done for the man whom the king delights to honor?' Now Haman thought in his heart, 'Whom would the king delight to honor more than me?'" So Haman here thinks that the king is talking about him. He doesn't realize here that he's talking about Mordecai. We notice Haman's answer. "And Haman answered the king, 'For the man whom the king delights to honor, let a royal robe be brought which the king has worn, and a horse on which the king has ridden, which has a royal crest placed upon its head. Then let this robe and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that he may array the man whom the king delights to honor, then parade him on horseback through the city square, and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor.'" Again, Haman thought these great things were being done for him, so he makes this suggestion to the king on how the king should honor him. Now this verse 10. It says, "Then the king said to Haman, 'Hurry, take the robe and the horse, as you have suggested, and do so for Mordecai the Jew, who sits within the king's gate. Leave nothing undone of all that you have spoken.'" Could you possibly think of anything more fitting a guy like Haman and his attitude, this boastful, prideful attitude that he had, his plan that he had come up with to destroy Mordecai and the Jews? And yet the tables now have been turned. Here Haman, the day before, had devised this great plan to hang Mordecai, and he was on his way to the king to present this plan to him, to have those things carried out. And now the whole thing is backfired. Instead of hanging Mordecai, he's been forced to honor him. in verse 11. It says, so Haman took the robe and the horse, arrayed Mordecai, and led him on horseback through the city square, and proclaimed before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delights to honor. Verse 12 tells us that Haman returned home in shame with his head covered. So again, we think about the timing of these things. The day before Haman had saw Mordecai, he was angered. He had this plan to kill him the very next day, and that very night the king couldn't sleep, and that very night he called for these records to be read in his presence, where he is reminded of these good deeds that Mordecai had done for him. Again, we ask ourselves, was it chance, was it accident, or was it God's providence? Again, we can read this, and you can answer that for yourselves, but I think the answer is quite obvious. Meanwhile, in chapter 7, the king and Haman are returning to the second banquet when Queen Esther, in verse 2, the king again asks Esther what her request is. It says, and on the second day at the banquet of wine, the king again said to Esther, what is your petition, Queen Esther? It shall be granted to you, and what is your request? Up to half the kingdom it shall be done. So again, they're at this second banquet when the king asked her there again what her request is. Now remember back in chapter 2, if you read it, that Mordecai had asked Esther not to reveal that she was a Jew to the king. So maybe here in chapter 7, and probably so, that the king doesn't realize that at this point that Esther is a Jew. Now remember that as she makes this request to him in verses 3 and 4. It says, Then Queen Esther answered and said, if I have found favor in your sight, O king, and if it pleases the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, to be killed, and to be annihilated. Had we been sold as male and female slaves, I would have held my tongue, although the enemy could never compensate for the king's loss. Again, Esther's request here was that she and her people be spared from this destruction. In verse 5, we notice the king's response. It says, so King Ahasuerus answered and said to Queen Esther, who is he? And where is he? Who would dare presume in his heart to do such a thing? At this point, we realize that Haman's days are numbered. Verse 6. It said, and Esther said, the adversary and enemy is the wicked Haman. So Haman was terrified both before the king and queen. Haman's wickedness had been revealed. You can read on through this, and we'll be reading verse 10 there, that ultimately Haman was hanged. And he was not only hanged, but he was hanged on the same gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai to be hanged on. Verse 10 says, so they hanged Haman on the gallows that he had prepared for Mordecai. Then the king's wrath subsided. We read on in chapter 8 that the Jews were ultimately spared from destruction. We read of a new decree that was written that would spare their lives. When you look in chapter 8 and verse 11, it says, by these letters the king permitted the Jews who were in every city to gather together and to protect their lives, to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the forces of any people or province that would assault them, both little children and women, and to plunder their possessions. So the enemies of the Jews were defeated. And we also read later on in chapter 10 and verse 3 that Mordecai was promoted to a great position of power, second only to the king. Point being, in the book of Esther, we see that although mankind has been given free will, and although mankind has choice, the sovereignty of God always prevails. God's will is always accomplished. He has a purpose for everyone and everything. Esther was raised up at a specific time and for a specific purpose, to save her people, to save God's people from destruction. Again, God's will prevailed. Any questions or comments on a quick review of the book of Esther? Hopefully we can see there God's providence at work. Look at Proverbs chapter 16 and verse 9. Proverbs 16 verse 9 says, a man's heart plans his way, but the Lord directs his step. Chapter 20 and verse 24. A man's steps are of the Lord. How then can a man understand his own way? We looked at Romans 8:28, how these things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to His purpose. God's direction in the lives of mankind is undeniable. When you go back and you look at these examples that we've looked at, and many more that we haven't, we understand that God knows our hearts. He knows our intents. He knows everything about each one of us, even before we were created. We looked at what the words of David there, how He knew David, even in the womb. And we've seen how God can raise up certain people at certain times to use certain people as instruments in this plan that He has to accomplish His will that He has purposed even from the foundation of the world. Here God spared the Jews from certain destruction, and He did it through His providence. It's seen in the recorded records. It's recorded in these recorded accounts. We see the power and the providence of God and how it's worked in times past, and we can understand that it didn't cease to work. It still works today. Sometimes through some different means, we understand that sometimes the miraculous means were used in Scripture. We understand it may work a little differently today. But we also understand that God's still there, that He does still direct things as He pleases. Notice Romans chapter 9 and verse 17. Here it's referring to Israel's time in Egypt under the cruel Pharaoh. Notice what it says about Pharaoh. It says, "For the Scripture says to the Pharaoh, 'For this very purpose I have raised you up, that I may show my power in you, and that my name may be declared in all the earth.'" Again, we can have full assurance, and we do have full assurance in God's power, in His dominion, and in His providence, because it's been revealed to us in the pages of this book. Everything and everything that He has created is according to God's purpose in order to carry out His will. 2 Peter chapter 2. And verse 9. It says, "Then the Lord knows how to deliver the godly out of temptations, and to reverse the unjust under punishment, and to reserve the unjust under punishment for the day of judgment." God in His own way and in His own time is willing and He's able to deliver those who are righteous and at the same time punish the wicked. God through His providence is a righteous judge of good and wicked. He is able to deliver, and again He is willing to deliver the righteous through whatever means He may find necessary. Maybe means that we don't understand quite at the time how He's doing it or if He's really doing it at all, but we understand that He does in His own time and by whatever means He chooses. You look in verses 4 through 7 there, it gives some examples where God did just that, how He would deliver the righteous. Verse 4 says, "For if God did not spare the angels who sinned, but cast them down to hell and delivered them into chains of darkness to be reserved for judgment, He did not spare the ancient world, but saved Noah, one of the eight people, a preacher of righteousness, bringing in the flood on the world of the ungodly, and turning the cities of Sodom and Gomorrah into ashes, condemned them to destruction, making them an example to those who afterward would live ungodly, and delivered righteous Lot, who was oppressed by the filthy conduct of the wicked. For that righteous man dwelling among them tormented his righteous soul from day to day by seeing and hearing their lawless deeds." Again, God knows how to deliver the righteous, even in the most evil and wicked times, even through times of despair and hardship that we may experience in our life. We know that if we remain faithful to God as Noah did, as Lot did, that we can be delivered from all things. Any questions? Comments? We've looked at some Old Testament examples. We have many examples in the New Testament that we simply don't have time to look at them all of God's providential care there for His own special people. We can look at the apostles. We can look at specifically Peter, Paul. You can look at so many examples. One of the things we can think about in God's providence is how God's plan to spread the gospel was carried out. And how even in the spreading out of that gospel, that God was with the apostles as they went along this mission. That even through the hardships and the trials that they faced, God had a purpose for these men. He had a will that this gospel be spread. He had a plan for that to happen. And he wasn't going to let that fail. When you look in Matthew chapter 28, verses 19 and 20, there, the Great Commission. Verse 19 says, Jesus said, "Go therefore and make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit." Notice verse 20. It says, "Teaching them to observe all things that I have commanded you, and lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age." We notice that statement there, "Lo, I am with you always." In this great mission that they would go on, and the tribulations and trials they would face, they weren't alone. It says that He was always going to be with them. He was present with them at all times. God made that promise. In John chapter 14, verse 26, and chapter 16, verses 7 through 13, we see that He promised that the Comforter, the Holy Spirit, would come. That He would guide them into all understanding. That He would be there for them, which we know happened in Acts chapter 2, verses 1 through 4, as He revealed these things that they were to say and they were to do. You look in Mark chapter 16, verse 20. It says, "And they went out and preached everywhere, the Lord working with them and confirming the word through the accompanying signs." So God had a plan to spread the gospel. And in His providence and His foresight, He purposed these able men, which He knew were able, to do just that. And again, He was with them in all that they did. It says, "The Lord working with them." We have the example in Acts chapter 4 that we read of the arrest of Peter and John there in verse 3 for declaring salvation through Jesus Christ. We read in Acts chapter 5, verses 17 and 18, how the apostles there were cast into prison. But again, we read in verses 19 and 20 that even in prison, that they were delivered from that prison by God. That He showed this special care again for His children, for those that were carrying out and being faithful to Him. Again, these were men of great courage. They were men of great character, willing to be beaten and to suffer for the cause of Christ. These men weren't chosen haphazardly. They weren't chosen by accident. And things that occurred by God's foresight. In His foresight, He knew what kind of men these were, and that with His help they could carry out His will. Any questions, again, or comments on this? We'll continue with this idea next week.